All right, everybody, welcome back to the Dylan Gemelli podcast. I have a very, very, very special guest today, one that I am extremely excited for all of you to meet. This, my friends, is one of the brightest minds that I have yet to come across. I want to introduce you to Dave Lee.
I think it's the best intro I've ever had, man. So thank you so much. And as someone who's been a fan of your work since, as I said before, like 2016, I think is when I started checking out your channel. That accolade means a lot coming from yourself. So thank you for having me, and thank you everyone for taking your time out to listen to me talk. It means a lot.
Absolutely, brother. And I appreciate that praise from you as well. So guys, I had the pleasure of meeting Dave at the Mr. Olympia this year. He was one of the speakers at the round table, and it was one of those times where I was taken aback. I had to look at my wife and go, okay, I got to talk to that guy as soon as this is over. And then we got to talking and come to find out he had kind of already known who I was. But for me, it was really important to get him on here because of his wide knowledge base. And Dave, I kind of brought this up to you, but I speak to so many people, thousands upon thousands every year that I interact with online and coach and all of this. And I've been doing it a decade, and rarely have I come across somebody with your knowledge base. So I want to try to, I know you're busy, and I want to get as much out of you as I can in this short time. So guys, Dave does a lot. He writes eBooks, he puts out a lot of content, and it's just some of the most informative stuff I've read. So Dave, why don't you tell us about why you got started? What motivated you to get started? Talk about advanced fundamental health, and let's let people understand what you do and how they can find you so they can start to gain some of this knowledge.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've got a bunch of content on YouTube that I've done over the last few years that are mainly, you know, lecture style pieces of content. And my big passion in this field is helping guys get educated on not only how these things work, but in a way that they can actually understand and intrinsically integrate what I'm saying and what they need to hear. I think that testosterone replacement therapy and testosterone optimization and just general holistic health for men, which all often kind of has a quite a big crossover, is something that is very misunderstood. A lot of guys are very misled. A lot of the time people are selling things that don't have the guy's best interest at heart, but they can make a 10 or 20% commission on a bunch of nonsense. And I think the most important thing for guys to understand at the moment regarding their health and their fitness as well is that testosterone is essentially a man's life force, and it is under threat and under attack by the modern environment, as well as the environment that we were brought up in. And there are so many guys at the moment who are experiencing the downstream effects of potentially a lifelong of endocrine disruption, and they're experiencing that physiologically and psychologically. And it's something that more and more guys are waking up to and going and getting their testosterone checked, you know, from channels like yourself and other providers who are making this content and putting it out there. And starting to empower their health in terms of being like, okay, I understand that there could be a problem here with my testosterone, but then going, okay, well, what do I do about it? And I remember being in 2016, watching your videos, reading Jay Campbell's first ebook, and you know, that was basically all there was. So when I got through that journey myself, and I actually ended up enrolling in a postgraduate I did my undergrad in marketing, and then I wanted to go into a master's in psychiatry to understand how the brain worked. So after I did my postgrad diploma in science, I very quickly dropped out of psychiatry because I realized that endocrinology was what I was the most interested in, but I wasn't interested in pursuing a medical degree. So I became very fascinated in how hormones impact the brain, how hormones underpin how mental health works, and ultimately has a very strong impact on our subjective experience of being alive. And I think that that's a lot of the time what we're looking at with health optimization, biohacking, all the stuff that people are watching this kind of content around, is we're trying to have a better subjective experience of life. And I think that understanding your hormones and understanding the role that hormones play in influencing so much of your cognition as well as your biological functions kind of means that it's something that you can't overlook, and it's something that you must look at to ideally optimize naturally. But if you're in a situation where you need exogenous hormone support, I'm very passionate about helping guys either troubleshoot situations where they go and see everyone else and they end up with me and we try to work out what's going on and get to the bottom of their kind of idiopathic, confusing challenges they're having with their TRT, or helping them get educated around, you know, creating content that's just easy to understand, that guys can go, okay, this is the way that I need to do my TRT. This is the way I need to get things right. And when something goes wrong, this is what I need to look into. So I want as many guys to be able to understand and get their TRT right, whether that is ideally through a provider that is informed and knows what they're doing. But if they're also in a situation where they can't get access to a good provider and someone who knows what they're doing, they can access content like yours and mine to be able to wrap their head around the basics and ideally steer their ship in the right direction.
Excellent. And, you know, I find it intriguing and also really coincidental that you were working on mental health and tied it all together, because one of the things that I've especially learned and seen over time is there is a very, very large comparative nature that goes on between mental health and low testosterone. A lot of people don't understand. They just think it's, oh, I'm tired. Oh, I have no libido. Oh, I can't, you know, lose fat and gain muscle. But the mental part, the brain fog and all of these things, that's a big aspect of the low quality of life that you don't realize that you have with low testosterone. And I see that you've pointed that out a lot. And being with the psychology background, it helps to have somebody like you that goes into different areas of what low testosterone can really cause. Because like when I was reading your ebook, for example, and I'd like you to talk about this, you touched on, because the overall testosterone number, one of the things I love that you touched on is not necessarily the thing to look at. Like you pointed out, it was the free testosterone. But I liked how you covered all the areas that need to be addressed and looked at through blood panels, as opposed to just going, oh, my total T is low, so I need TRT, which may not be the case. Could you talk about, like you were talking about testing different aspects, looking at SHBG, looking at ferritin, things that people don't think about. Would you expound on that a little bit? Because I love that you did that, and it's so helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really important. And the stuff that I talk about tends to be the stuff that I've realized in practice that just is the way it is. I mean, a lot of the time we want the shortcut, we want the path of least resistance, we want the magic pill. And if that existed, I'd be pushing people towards that. And I think that a lot of the time people go down dead end pathways and they end up at this model that I like to relate to the movie Cars. I just did a talk at the Silverback Summit, which is hopefully going to go up on YouTube soon. And I've done this 3-part series, which is the first 2 chapters are free on YouTube, and it's called Your Brain on Testosterone and the War on Masculinity. And what I like to relate human beings to is like Cars the movie, which is that like animated Pixar movie where the cars are like characters and they're alive. And I think looking at the human body as a interconnected series of systems, like a car, like a machine, but it's also sentient, it's conscious, like the characters in that movie. And when you go to a mechanic, if your car's making a noise or it's not starting properly, I don't know that much about cars, so my analogies aren't that great, but I think it still makes sense. But if you go to a mechanic, ideally what a mechanic should do, if they're not a dodgy mechanic, or if you go to a doctor and they're a fucking dodgy doctor, that can be a problem. But right, what they should do is perform a comprehensive workup of what's going on to try to diagnose the issue. They look at everything together. Because sometimes if the noise is coming from over there, it's actually to do with this thing down here. We know that about cars. So right, one of the things that people really mess up when they're looking at their blood work and looking at their health is they just measure the marker that they're the most interested in. And from a marketing standpoint, which was my original background, is testosterone is the easiest thing to sell to a man. I mean, if TRT didn't shut down your natural production, it would be like selling a glass of water to a thirsty guy in the desert. I mean, everyone wants more testosterone. But what we need to be looking at when we're trying to work out what's going wrong is, well, if the testosterone's low, why is it low? And if it is low, is it in concert with other issues? Or has it being low for a long time actually caused other problems? We know that if your check engine light comes on in the car and you keep driving it, you're going to make the problem worse. We know that. And what we also need to understand, if someone's gone through a decade with low testosterone or worse, if they've never had optimal testosterone to begin with, which is what's happening for a lot of these younger guys coming up, is their entire identity as well as their physiology is built around a low testosterone environment. And one of the most important things that testosterone does, well, I mean, it does a whole bunch of important things, but one thing I like to look at the most is how testosterone works as an antagonist towards a lot of the stress hormones in the body, like cortisol and adrenaline. And when a man forms in a low androgen environment, I find that he is more likely going to be predisposed to anxiety and depression because neurologically he doesn't have that buffer against stress. He doesn't have that impulse and that drive and that feeling when you're 20 or 21 to go and take risks and be brave and be courageous and take a swing at the world and, you know, leave your mark and do something bigger than yourself. He is going to be more driven towards avoidant behaviors, procrastination, staying inside, playing video games to give that sense of, you know, sense of war and sense of competition, but in a way that is less vulnerable and has less of a risk because we're going to follow that path of least resistance more. But then the other problem is that if that's the trajectory of our lives when we're 21, 22, 23, when we get to 30 or we get to 35, we lack a lot of the competence and skills that we've needed because we've been in such a low energy avoidant state for so long. And I think that this is what's happening with a lot of guys coming up with anxiety and depression. They are basically conditioned psychologically due to living and embodying a vessel that is sick. It's geriatric. They've got the testosterone levels of a 60-year-old when they're 21. And then we're right. Wondering why they're lacking these masculine androgenic traits, which they ultimately need to compete in the world and get to where they want to go. And then they have this negative perception of themselves because they think, oh, I'm not trying hard enough. I'm a little bitch. I'm a failure. I'm, you know, psychologically the problem, where in reality, it's like, well, yeah, you're a bad driver, but if your car was fucked the whole time, then what did you really expect? How fast could you really drive and how good of skills could you have?
Right.
And I think it's important to approach these guys with a lot of compassion and understanding, which I think is very much lacking. And I think that looking at the whole body together is one of the most important things that we can do when we start. So if someone's like, okay, shit, this resonates, what do I do? You do a comprehensive lab panel. You look at everything together, and then you have someone who knows what they're doing to go through it, go through your symptoms, go through your diet and lifestyle, go through your history, understand everything about you and go, okay, what does this person as a whole have going on? Where are the deficits? What's the weakest link? What's the lowest hanging fruit? And do they need testosterone replacement therapy, or do they need to be able to support their own natural testosterone production? And if they do need TRT, do we need to make other interventions in their health or their mental health to make sure it actually works the way that we want it to work? And I think that that's completely lacking from a lot of prescriptions that guys get from TRT. It's just, here's your test, go take it, do a couple of jabs a week, see you later. And then they come back in 6 months, 12 months, or even 2 years, and they go, hey, I'm not the man who I thought I would be from this. And it's because they either haven't been taught to put the work in, they haven't been taught to fix their other health issues like their thyroid, their liver, their diet, their training, you know, just their general day-to-day routines. And it's because I think providers aren't spending the time with these guys or having the know-how or the attention to detail to really treat men holistically and really understand what's actually going on.
All true. And one of the things that really bothers me is the ease in which a lot of these anti-aging clinics, which are clearly just out there for money, not all of them, but let's be real about this, most of them, and I see them do multiple things that I think you're going to agree with me on. I'm fairly confident you are. One, they're giving it out like candy to people that, and I'm not saying, because we both know that sometimes even a 400 or 500 level, somebody still might not be right. Generally speaking, that's a pretty good level for most, but it's still, you know, everybody's different. And so you have to look at it, but they're giving it to people that don't need it. And then a lot of times I see general practitioners, especially going, okay, here's your TRT. We're also going to give you HCG, anastrozole. They start throwing these things at you that you generally don't need. Now, I am not a proponent of HCG whatsoever. I find it completely unnecessary. I don't like it. I find very little use out of it. That's just me. Everybody, I've taken shit about that. I can back up why I don't like it. But I find that the only area that I even slightly recommended it is part of a fertility protocol, because I don't find it on its own to do it. You need HMG, HCG, and Clomid. And I can tell you with certainty that it works, because I've seen it work on so many guys that are dormant. But I see this misuse. I see uneducated people writing scripts, or people with lack of care and monitoring and understanding the core issues, What are some of the things that you run into, and is some of the stuff I'm saying resonating with you and things that you see?
I see why you like my book. I have the same perspective on these things. Yes. I think that people like us, and I mean, you've been in this game for a lot longer than me, is like, if you've been in this game for long enough, if you've been in the trenches for long enough and you actually listen to what people say, you don't just dismiss them. Because like, I've seen tons of, you know, practitioners who will say, everyone responds well to HCG. I'm like, yeah, your clients don't come back to you. They come to me, and then right. I fix them and I unfuck them. So that's not true. But if you've been in this game for long enough and you actually care about the people that you talk to and you actually spend the time with them, we all tend to kind of come to the same conclusion because of just, we just go outside and we see that the sky is fucking blue. And right. people can sit behind their desk and they can read studies and say, well, mechanistically, the sky is green. And I'm like, yeah, but trust me, I went outside today. I've gone outside every day this last few years. It's fucking blue. It doesn't matter what that study says. And that's the stuff that you get with HCG. So, I mean, completely. I would say that, and, you know, as you said, everyone's different. And the thing with this is that, like, there are always exceptions to the rules. And
yes,
there are always outliers. But when it comes to making rules and when it comes to looking at how the scientific method works, we actually remove outliers to be able to make meaning. So there's always going to be outliers, and that's fine. So if you're listening to this and you're an outlier, cool. But the majority of guys only need testosterone. That is the way that it works. Now, that's much less profitable because if you're running a clinic and you sell 3 medications to 100 guys and you make 300 points of profit, that's much more efficient than right. selling to 300 guys 1 medication because now you have 3 times the overhead and 3 times the guys to manage. So it's much more profitable to sell fries and the Coke with the TRT. It's much more profitable to sell the anastrozole and the HCG because it's a profit-making machine. And it's very easy to sell this shit to guys because you can go, okay, well, if you don't take HCG, you're going to become infertile. And if you don't take your AI, you're going to get bitch tits. And if someone's already bamboozled and they're overwhelmed and they don't know what's going on, fear will shut down logic and reasoning. And then they're going to make an impulsive decision and you're going to make the sale. So it's a very effective marketing tactic. It's very unethical, but it works. And a lot of the time people aren't in right. this game for care and compassion and understanding. They're in it to make money. So, and you know, all the best to them if that's what they want to do. But people like us are going to come out here and bust myths because that's just the right thing to do. So yeah, I completely agree with HCG. I think that and this is what I cover in Beyond TRT, which was the presentation I gave at the Olympia, is that, you know, when we look at HCG, a lot of the time when guys are talking about it, they're talking about it as if it is luteinizing hormone. If HCG was luteinizing hormone, it would be a completely different conversation, but it's fucking not.
Right.
When people say that HCG mimics luteinizing hormone, it mimics luteinizing hormone in the same way that LSD mimics serotonin. It binds to the same receptor. It doesn't do the same thing. Trust me, if you take LSD, it does not do the same thing as an SSRI. I can assure you. So when we're looking at why so many guys react badly to HCG, and I would argue a whole bunch of other guys react badly to it, they're just not subjectively aware of the fact that it's causing them problems.
Right.
You're injecting a physiological amount of a female pregnancy hormone. If you can piss on a pregnancy test year-round positive, I don't think that's a net positive for male health. Also, HCG has not been studied long-term in men outside of fertility protocols when we look at all parameters of health. We have no idea what this is going to do. And it puts us in this very interesting catch-22, right? And this is something that I don't have the answer to, but this is the reality of it. Is it better to leave the luteinizing hormone receptors unactivated, dormant, or is it better to agonize them and keep them active with a female pregnancy hormone? I don't know, but I would lean more towards the former because we have a lot more data on the former, and I have the saying, when in doubt, leave it out. That's just my approach. So the thing that I've found with TRT is that in general, it's about when you unfuck guys who've been messed around by other practitioners, you're generally taking things out rather than putting things in. Now, with that said, I've found plenty of times where practitioners overlook hypothyroidism. That's a common one. They're not checking for pregnenolone and DHEA levels, and they can be dysregulated by things like head injuries, heavy uses of anabolic steroids as well. Like, that is definitely something that will dysregulate it in some guys.
Sure.
But I primarily work with just guys who are just hypergonadal, who might not have androgen-induced shutdown of their hormone systems. And in general, unless you're much older, a lot of the time your adrenal hormones and your thyroid hormones are working just fine. The idea that TRT shuts down pregnenolone and DHEA is fucking nonsense.
I know.
That is not true. And you can quote whatever mechanistic crap you want, but in reality, if you take a bunch of guys on TRT and you measure their pregnenolone and DHEA levels, the guys with the pregnenolone and DHEA deficiencies are, one, outliers, and two, they have a root cause as to why they're low. If TRT caused systemic shutdown of pregnenolone and DHEA, every single person on TRT, or the vast majority, removing outliers, would have not only symptoms of pregnenolone and DHEA deficiency, but they'd have lab work for low numbers. They don't. They just simply do not. So this idea that these hormones sit upstream in some kind of river is a literal interpretation of a diagram. The pregnenolone and DHEA cascade that we look at on Wikipedia with the arrows that point down and show all the precursor hormones, they're not like rivers and buckets of water that flow down. It's a diagram. It's for illustrative purposes. It's a system of enzymatic processes. So the adrenal system doesn't get shut down from TRT. It doesn't. It can get shut down from massive fucking cycles, especially while you're on cycle, for sure. But it's not something that's just given. So yeah, I'd say that we've probably seen a lot of similar stuff, which is that the majority of guys, you know, who don't have unique or extreme, you know, past circumstances tend to just need TRT and a good diet and good training and good lifestyle practices. And I argue that most, and I'd love to get your insight on this, because I put it very simply, this is just what I observe, is that the majority of the things that cause negative symptoms on TRT, like the side effects on TRT, they are caused by the unresolved issue that caused the low testosterone in the first place. So if you're drinking tons of booze and you're fat and you give yourself the testosterone levels of 21-year-old Giga Chad, you're going to get side effects. Like, it's just, it's got to happen, because you've just put a Lamborghini engine into a piece of shit Suzuki Swift that needed a service. You didn't service the rest of the car. You just put a sports car engine in it, and then you drove out of the parking lot and you sped out of it, and then it all fell apart and you went, oh, this engine's shit. It's like, no, it's not. And that's what I have found, is the majority, what we need to look at is go, if you want to put the optimal amount of testosterone into your body that you could physiologically make, and you want that upper limit of TRT, the sports TRT, the testosterone optimization, whatever the fuck you want to call it, you have to live in a way that if you could, you would be making that level naturally. And that will solve the side effects, assuming that your protocol is, you know, at least a couple of times a week injections and you're not doing big peaks and troughs and stuff. That solves the majority of issues, but guys don't want to do that. They don't want to train well. They don't want to eat well. They don't want to sleep well. They don't want to do that. They want the shortcut.
No, and that's one of the most problematic things that I run into for the past decade, is that the expectation of, for instance, oh, I'm going to take fucking Anavar and Deca and this and that, and I'm not going to do shit. I'm going to eat like shit. I'm going to be lazy, and it's just going to do all the work for me. And it's very similar to this. It's like if you have a heart condition or a cholesterol condition, and you start taking a statin, for example. Well, if you're still eating like shit and you're lazy and you're sedentary, what do you think the statin's going to do for you? Aside from give you side effects, which it's going to do regardless, do you really honestly think that it's going to start like hardening plaque or clearing plaque out of your arteries when you're just feeding the fire? It maybe will mitigate it. It's like working your ass off just so you can eat like shit. You're not going to get anywhere. You're still going to go backwards, and you're still going to hurt yourself internally. So if you're taking TRT with the expectation that, oh, I'm going to take TRT and I'm going to feel great and this and that, but I'm going to still eat like shit. I'm going to, like you said, I'm going to drink, I'm going to party, I'm going to be lazy, I'm going to smoke, whatever the case may be. Don't expect it to help you, and expect to have a slew of still side effects and get nowhere fast. And it drives me crazy, because everybody wants, and look, I'm a realist. We all want things right now, but the differentiating factor there is, you and me may want something right now, but we still realize we got to do the work to get what we want, and willing to do that and make the sacrifices. If you want to go get help, get TRT, great. That's a good first step. But if you don't want to do everything else that goes along with it, it's not just take this and get fixed. It's take this, make the lifestyle changes, change your quality of life, you'll get fixed. And that's, it's hard to embed that into people's head when everybody wants to just wake up and be fucking Mr. Olympia. You know, it's just not how it works. You know, the guys that are in Mr. Olympia, yes, we are all aware they have to take X amount of whatever, but they're still busting their ass. They're living the lifestyle and they're doing it like 7 days a week. You know, I do that. I'm not on a bunch of shit, but I live it 7 days a week. I don't cheat. I mean, literally, before I got on here with you, I had already done 2.5 hours of cardio and lifted for an hour. And that's how I start my Friday. You know, most people on Friday, it's like day off, you know, or oh, we can take it easy today. So I'm with you. And a lot of the people, they have these expectations and they don't live in reality. And I can't stand that. It drives me absolutely insane. And I'm sure you run into that quite often with people that come to you. One of the things that I'm going to bring up, I want to finish this HCG and anastrozole topic with you, but then I want to talk about pregnenolone because you are one of the, actually you are the most well-versed on that that I've ever seen. And I want you to talk about that to people. People that are listening, if you're new, anastrozole is an aromatase inhibitor. It's just Arimidex, just so you know. Now, what I wanted to tell you, Dave, is like, for me, if I take over 200 milligrams of test, instantly I'm starting, my estrogen levels are above 50. And I know like that's crazy, but that's an outlier, right? But a lot of these doctors, they prescribe that. Well, if you're on 125 or 150 milligrams of test, which is a general TRT dose, and you start doing that, you could crush your estrogen and have an adverse effect. And on top of that, I want your opinion because I am so down on using drugs like Clomid or Novadex when it's not necessary, HCG when it's not necessary. I mean, you're talking about treatments for cancer. You're talking about things that aren't meant for men necessarily to be taking, like female breast cancer, for example, with Novadex, or fertility drugs you don't want to take just for the hell of it. And I have this fucking war with the bros, you know, about HCG, wanting to run it in PCT, because HCG is suppressive. HCG increases estrogen levels and has a lot of adverse effects. I want to talk to you, though, about doses, because I'm sure you get this question. Well, what's a good TRT dose? It's kind of like the question of how do I lose weight? It's like, dude, this is a drawn out conversation. How do you determine a good TRT dose? Because I see guys going, oh, I'm going to cruise at 300. I'm like, brother, that's not cruising. That's just staying on. That's too high. You know, what factors do you look at? How do you determine and dial in a person's actual dose? Because that's not a simple yes or no quick answer that people ask, you know? So what do you get in with that? And do you ever recommend anastrozole or aromasin or anything like that for people on TRT?
I love this topic because this is like the more nitty gritty stuff. And this is the stuff that's actually practical. So yes. My full TRT 101 book is like an instruction manual on my approach to this. Like I've just basically went, look, there's no cookie cutter approach that works for everyone, but there's a template. There's a template. And that's what I've tried to make as easy to understand as people. So I wrote it like an instruction manual that used to come with like Nintendo 64 games when I was a kid. I was like, this is the kind of instruction manual that should come with TRT. So everything that I'm going to say is kind of borrowed out of there. So I've got my own biases. I've got my own perspectives. I don't like pharmaceutical drugs. And that's just a bias that I'm well aware of. But I don't like pharmaceutical drugs because I don't like things that work on the body. I like things that work with the body. Because when it comes to pharmaceuticals, you're pushing one aspect of the body in a certain direction, and the body is going to compensate around that. Plus, what you're trying to achieve in terms of one thing, you might actually cause problems with other things down the track that we don't know. So I generally, my approach, like some people need pharmaceuticals. If you've got, you know, if you're sick and you've got issues going on, then cool. Like if you've got a massive infection, you fucking take the antibiotics. But in general, if we're looking to be like, okay, well, what should a man do to be his healthiest? And I'm sure people are going to cry in the comments. I'm not going to read them. But my perspective on it is that if we are giving you the optimal amount of testosterone in a delivery mechanism that is going to most closely represent your optimal natural production, then you shouldn't need a pharmaceutical drug to control your estrogen. That's the ideal perspective that we're looking at. The problem that we have, and this is kind of where I think the nuance is that I don't think there's a set number that is physiological or super physiological. Because if I have a guy who's insulin resistant and 60 years old and alcoholic, what's going to be physiological for him is going to be very different than what is physiological for 21-year-old Giga Chad who's doing everything right. So I think sometimes the issue with guys is they're taking too much or the protocol's wrong. But I also think the other side of the equation is some guys aren't taking enough. And I think there's way too much conversation about being like, you're taking too much, you're taking too much, you're taking too much. Some guys are taking too little. They're leaving stuff on the table. They're not actually optimizing the testosterone levels. So how do you find the Goldilocks spot? I think that firstly, you have to outsource it to someone who's not emotionally involved in the outcome of this. You need someone who can supervise it, who has your best interest at heart, as opposed to their financial interest at heart. And they're not going to be making emotional reactive decisions. So you need to outsource this. But the person who's outsourcing it, my approach is that when you start someone on TRT, you're kind of throwing a dart at the dartboard. And if you hit the bullseye, sick. But I think kind of what we're aiming for is the ring around the bullseye, and then we can move it into the bullseye based on the first blood test. So, assuming that we've got someone who's an average responder, and assuming that, you know, that they've got average SHBG levels, and that, you know, everything's kind of been checked and their health's good, I think to start someone off, you want to shoot for about the top of the reference range. And again, people are going to cry, being like, "The reference range is this, blah 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 blah." Yeah, I know, I agree. The reference range is bullshit, but the top of the range, if you've been hypergonadal for decades or your whole life, you can't just shoot straight up to double the top of the range. Your body's going to go, "What the fuck is this?" You're going to get a bunch of side effects. You're not going to be able to actually manage water retention. Your nipples are going to get sensitive. You're going to get acne. It's just like basically fast tracking puberty over 5 years into like 3 weeks. Like, not going to work.
Yes,
So
absolutely.
I like shooting for the top of the range. And in Australia, we use the picomole per liter range, which depending on the lab you get might be 6 to 25 or 8 to 30 if you're lucky. But I like to shoot like a 25 to 30 total testosterone, which will usually give you a free testosterone for about 600 to 800, which for us is like the top of the range. Now, I can't convert the units off the top of my head. That's why I'm just using the range as like an arbitrary kind of, you know, like flag post here that we can talk about. So I like to shoot for the top of the range and then let that settle in for a few months. Let the body adjust to having double or triple the testosterone levels it's had for a long time, and then look at titrating up from there. Because your body needs time to adjust. You can't just shoot straight for the finish line. If you're like, "Hey, I want to learn to drive a car. I've been driving this piece of shit Suzuki Swift my whole life." You don't just go straight for the Lambo, because you're gonna crash it and spin it around the corner. And it doesn't mean that the Lambo is a bad car. It just means that you need to learn how to drive it. The amount of time that guys will say, "Oh, I've gone on TRT and now I can't control my temper anymore." I'm like, "Dude, you never had a temper in the first place. You weren't under control. You were placid. Now you've actually got some fire. And yeah, no shit, you don't know how to handle it because you just jacked yourself through the stratosphere." So I think shooting for the top of the range, and in general, what I put in the book, I like 150 a week as a starting dose because it's just easy to divvy up. If it's 250 milligram per mil, that's 0.3 twice a week or 0.2 three times a week. It just splits up. It's just easy to do. And then I like to titrate up in, again, you want to go for an increment that is actually easily divisible. So generally it's 5 milligrams per shot. And I like to work up in increments of, you know, generally 20 to 30 milligrams a week. And if we're fine tuning, like 10 to 15 milligrams a week every 3 to 4 months. And if you look at it and go, "Okay, if you're going to start at 150 and then you're going to end up at, let's say, you know, 200, for example, and you go 150 to 175 to 200, and you do that for 3 months and then another 3 months and another 3 months, because of how the half-life is building up in your body, if you're using Cypionate or Enanthate, which most people are doing, you're kind of on a pretty gradual incline anyway, because it takes, you know, 8 to 12 weeks for it to build up in your body. And then you're pushing it up again a little bit, and then you're pushing it up again a little bit. So you're being patient and giving your body time to adjust. But I have found that therapeutically, guys do the best on TRT between the top of the reference range and double the top of the reference range. That's like the optimal dosing for some guys. Now, a lot of And in general, I find that how good your baseline health is and your age are the two determining factors of how where you should be within those goalposts. So if you're 21 and you're super healthy and you're doing everything right, you might do better at double the top of the range because that's where you should be peaking. Whereas if you are in your 40s and 50s and maybe you're a bit off track, but you're getting your shit together and you've got some extra body fat to lose and you've got to kind of clean up the diet, but you're kind of getting yourself on track, maybe the top of the range is good for you now. And you might need more in the future, but you might not. So I've got plenty of younger guys who do well at the top of the range or even, you know, still within the range. And I've got plenty of older guys who do better at double the top of the range too. They're the outliers. But I find that that's a pretty good marker for how this stuff tends to work. And the most important thing that we can do when we're measuring someone's hormone values when you're moving up in the dose is measuring all the blood work together, measuring the blood pressure, seeing how their sleep is. If they track their sleep, that's cool as well to look at, but I don't really use all the gizmos and shit. But like, if you jack the testosterone dose up too high, a lot of the time they're going to start, you know, sweating at night. Their central nervous system is going to be overstimulated. They're not going to sleep properly. They might get a bit of acne. They might get a bit of agitation, but a lot of the time their blood pressure will go up. Sometimes their liver enzymes will jack. Sometimes their blood viscosity will jack up. Like sometimes you can get some peaks in the blood work to go, oh no, we've got a signal that you're actually, you've crossed into super physiological territory here. But it's also very important that guys aren't afraid to push their levels up a little bit, and they're not afraid of testosterone, because like testosterone is good for you up until it's not.
Right.
So it's important to go, if we want to optimize testosterone production, if you shut down your natural production, if you're taking 150 a week or 200, you're just a shutdown. So you don't want to leave something on the table if you've come in to make this intervention, but you also want to, you don't want to shoot your levels too high for the sake of, oh, I want to be more masculine, I want to be more jacked, I want to be more this. It's like, you should maybe do some martial arts and go to the gym and work on your mental health. That's kind of what you need. So it's case by case. It's different for each person, but that's my kind of general rule of thumb.
So you said in the picograms, what was your optimal number? You said, was it 30?
In picomole per liter for total,
yeah.
I would be looking at anywhere from 25 to 50, depending on the guy.
Okay.
Anything beyond 50, and I'm quoting Dr. Keith Nichols here. He would say, and he said on a podcast before, so this is an old one, so I'm hoping I can still quote him and it's still accurate, but he would say that if your total testosterone is over 50, which in, or if your free testosterone in the US units in the range that goes up to like 24, 25,
yep.
If that's over 50 and your total is over 1500 and you've got negative symptoms, the problem is probably coming from somewhere else that's not just your testosterone level, because testosterone is not a panacea for all your physical and mental health problems. It's not. You can have 1500 free testosterone and still be a little bitch. You can have a 1500 free testosterone and still be anxious and fat and afraid of the world. It's not the only thing that's going to turn you into the person you want to be. It's the foundation for you to build yourself into that guy.
Perfect. So I did the conversion just so I could give it to people that are doing it in the nanograms. And so 25 to 50 is a range of about 720 to about 1440, just so people that are watching understand that and can find the similarities there and can translate the conversion. And for me, I'm very similar to how you look at it. I always find personally that in the 700 to 850 range is about where I like to see people at, and I believe is extremely healthy. Everybody's different. Mm-hmm. And so a little bit higher or a little bit less might be perfectly fine for some people. Now, one thing that I wanted to run by you, and I realized that somebody that is metabolizing differently or is severely hypogonadal, this conversion may not apply, but in general, you could take 5 to 7 times your dose. So let's say you're running 100 milligrams a week. Chances are you're going to be between 500 and 700, more likely closer to 700, depending on your metabolization. And so I say that because people that tell me they're cruising on 300 milligrams, I'm like, your chances are your testosterone levels are over 2000. I don't find that to be something healthy to walk around with year round. That's too much. More is not always better. Now, we want you in a good range, clearly, but it's just like anything else. You can't take 30 aspirin a day, or, you know, vitamins are toxic. You could feasibly drown yourself if you drank water all fucking day. I mean, it's just, but my point is, more is not always better. And I think that that's hard for meatheads, especially, to get through their heads that are so wrapped around whatever it's going to take to get big without the concept of long-term health or longevity, which drives me, and that's an entirely different topic, but oh my gosh, it makes me fucking cringe. And I think that what you brought up, which is so important, is the monitoring and the understanding of what works for said person and seeing how to dial that in. It takes time. Just like when somebody asked me, well, how much Aromasin or Arimidex should I use? I don't know. because I don't know how estrogen prone you may or may not be. I also don't know how you're going to metabolize testosterone. I don't know. That's why it's important. Everything in life is fucking trial and error. I don't care what it is. Everything we do is trial and error because there's different outside influences and internal, you know, things that go on. So I think this is a really good conversation for people to grasp and understand that this is not a cookie cutter thing. One thing I did want to ask you, well, two things that I want to ask you about, the reference ranges, and I'll get into that here in a second. In terms of what is your opinion, and I have a feeling you're going to think just like me on this, of the changing of the reference ranges based on, well, testosterone levels over time have decreased, so the reference ranges are going down, you know, that type of bullshit. Well, my opinion, which I have a feeling you're going to find, or it'll be similar to yours, is maybe the fucking reference or the total testosterone numbers are going down over time because our lifestyle changes are dog shit. And just because that has changed and those influences have changed doesn't necessarily mean that, oh, that's healthy now. That doesn't mean that that's healthy now. That means that we're living unhealthy and we need to fix it. I mean, what's your opinion on the... And especially when I see a reference range here that is like, oh, 230 to now it's like 800. It used to be 950 and it just keeps going down. Different labs, LabCorp, Quest, they have their different numbers. But what's your opinion on these reference ranges as opposed to how somebody fucking feels?
Yeah, ours are dropping massively. Back when I first got my testosterone checked in the units that we use, and I've actually seen... blood tests from Mexico and Canada, like old ones, where the total testosterone top of the range went up to 62. And that in your units would be like 1600, 1700, like high.
Yeah. Yep.
Ours drop every year. And it's misleading is one of the biggest issues. So as far as I'm aware, and this is just, you know, this is not something I've looked into massively, but this is just my general understanding of it, is that the reference range is recalculated based on the last X amount of people who've got that blood test done, and they calculate the mean and standard deviation either side, then they put it in. Healthy young men are not getting their testosterone levels checked, particularly in Australia, and if they are, they're doing it privately. Most men who are getting their testosterone levels checked are older men who are potentially at risk of things like prostate cancer because the doctors are running it because they think that it's going to kill them. But sick people in Australia are the ones who are getting their blood test done through the public healthcare system, not healthy men. So I think what we're looking at is just an average representation of how sick people are getting sicker. And the reason why this is misleading is because some blood work, the reference range is important. Bilirubin, if your bilirubin's over 20, you should get an ultrasound for fatty liver disease. That there's a marker there for a reason. There are some markers like EGFR, certain markers which are just like, yo, like this is the line in the sand, and if it's outside of this, we might have a problem. Cancer markers, things like, you know, autoimmune antibodies, things like that. But other markers are just basically averages, and they'll vary from lab to lab. And the problem is, and I'm not shitting on GPs in general. I think there are some great GPs, and GPs have a huge amount of stress and burden from patients because they're expected to be a jack of all trades, master of none. But if they're looking at your blood work and they're not versed in testosterone and they're going, oh, well, you're in the middle of the reference range. The problem is the middle of the reference range now was the lower quartile of the reference range a decade ago. So, and what we're going to get to a point soon where the top of the reference range is going to be what the bottom of the reference range was when we were younger. That's going to happen within probably the next decade without a doubt. So the problem, the way that I put it very simply is that if you're within that testosterone range as a measure of the average guy walking around, let's say it's not even sick people. Let's say it's the average guy. The average guy is most likely either fat or depressed or both. When we look at it statistically, the majority of people are either overweight or have some form of diagnosed mental health disorder. So if you want to be in that range of people, and yeah, that makes sense, particularly if you're not doing well, but the reference range can be very misleading for guys because they'll go to their doctor, they'll get their testosterone checked, they'll have all the hypogonadism symptoms, and then they'll go, oh, well, it's fine, I don't have a testosterone problem. But in reality, we know that hypogonadism symptoms can definitely occur anywhere within the probably the bottom half of the range, depending on where you're at and what your labs are. So, and particularly if you're younger, like, you know, when we look at a woman's hormone panel, it's adjusted for where she is in her cycle or if she's pre or post menopause. When we look at a testosterone level for a man, it's not adjusted by age. So we're using the same units for 20-year-olds that we're using for 80-year-olds. That doesn't make any fucking sense. So I
No.
think that like if you're a younger guy and you're 20, 21, 22, and you're doing everything right and your testosterone is in the bottom half of the range, you've probably got a problem. And if you're doing everything right that you should be doing, and I've got a whole lecture on this in terms of like do everything that you know you should be doing and stop doing everything you know you shouldn't be doing, and that'll solve the majority of your problems. And if you do that and you've still got, you know, low testosterone that's in the bottom half of the range and you've got symptoms, you might need to do some more research because you might actually have hypogonadism.
Right. Absolutely. That very, very on point, and I couldn't agree more. And the next thing that I wanted your opinion on, and I have a feeling once again our thoughts are going to align here. It's a two-part question, really. And then I want to talk to you about pregnenolone because I know that you have to go after that, and I know that that's a longer topic, but I want your opinion and thoughts on the different forms of TRT and then the different esters that are involved. So, because I see doctors, I know you do too, that are putting people on like two shots a month with undecanate or decanate or whatever. And a lot of guys that just want to inject once a week with a cypionate or an enanthate, or they're using Sustanon a lot for TRT. I'm one that has always felt that twice a week is going to provide you the most blood stability and the best overall feeling. Every time I've ever done once a week on myself personally, or had people that come to me and I have them switch to twice a week, they feel different. They feel better. I'm not a big fan of creams, pellets, all these other forms, oral forms of testosterone that people want to take. I don't find them to be nearly as efficient. And maybe because I'm a guy that coaches cycles and steroid use and stuff, where obviously those are not ideal for that scenario, but I don't find them. And hey, if it works for you, great, but I don't find them nearly as effective, personally. So I want your thoughts on the dosing protocols, the different ester chains, and then the different forms of options that we have for TRT and what your thoughts are on those and experiences.
Cool. Yeah, I love this topic. So, Sustanon is an interesting medication because Sustanon is just a marketing ploy to be able to patent a product that went generic to be able to sell it for more. Because when a pharmaceutical company makes a product, you have I think it's 8 years or 9 years that you can patent it, and then that's so that you can sell it for whatever the fuck you want for to recoup research and development cost, aka make a fucking killing, and then. So they will write that into the standard of care and they'll say, okay, well, this is now the best solution because it's the one that makes us the most money. So Sustanon, I think is, you know, and again, I'm not in the cycle world, but I imagine that Sustanon would work better in super physiological doses because when the short acting esters are wearing off, you're not crashing down to nothing. But for the sake of TRT, I think that Sustanon's annoying because it comes in glass ampules. And I think that one's better pinned if you're only using it in a replacement dose. I think it's better pinned either 3 times a week or daily because of those short esters. I think it's just a pain in the ass. So I don't use Sustanon for TRT for anything. It's also more expensive in Australia as well, which just makes no sense. Enanthate and cypionate to me are like Coke and Pepsi. They're interchangeable. They're both very good versions of cola. So I think that there are some molecular differences between enanthate and cypionate that may suggest why some people respond to one or another better, but that could also be placebo. The half-life differs by a few hours, so I use them interchangeably. And the general consensus that I've come to is that if there was a better option than stabbing ourselves, we all wouldn't be stabbing ourselves. So it's injectables is the best option that we have at the moment. Orals sound great, they're not strong enough, and they don't work. If they did, we'd all be using them. Cream has a place, but it has to be compounded at 20% and be liposomal based, and it has to be applied to the scrotum. The advantage of the cream is that, and again, I'm not talking about like the Andro Forte shit, that stuff you have to take a bath in, that stuff's crap. But like the 20% cream, the advantage of that is that it will convert more preferentially to DHT. And guys who have got chronic issues like, you know, elevated prolactin that's not from a prolactinoma, so like idiopathic hyperprolactinemia, chronic stress, like injuries that might be actually down-regulating 5-alpha reductase and leading to an increased metabolism to estrogen. A lot of the time, those guys will tolerate cream better, and it can actually push down their cortisol and prolactin markers if the root cause of that can't be resolved. But the problem with the cream is it's less forgiving. If you skip a dose, you're going to be having a low testosterone day. Plus, you can't have a shower straight afterwards. It could transfer sexually. I think the cream can be used once a day as opposed to twice a day. But that's something that I'm, you know, looking into and speaking to a bunch of people about just to give guys options. But in general, it's injections. The Nebido, Reandrin, undecanoate one, like, you know, one shot every 12 to 16 weeks. That sounds great. Like three shots a year. Fuck yeah. It doesn't work.
No.
Because the half-life's way shorter than the window that it's administered in. Plus the ester's too heavy. So most guys end up working out to get about like 70 milligrams a week.
Yep.
And it's just crap. But I think that when that goes generic, that might be a good option as like a once a week shot as an alternative for cypionate and enanthate in the future, theoretically, maybe.
Yeah.
But at this stage, enanthate, cypionate's the tried and true. It's the gold standard. And that's like, and I think, yeah, you're completely right. Like twice a week, I think, is the sweet spot for most people in terms of like the least amount you can stab yourself to get the most stability.
Yeah.
Some guys do better with three times a week. I would argue, and you'll probably be in the same boat as this, that when you're first on TRT, I think you're more influenced by the peaks and the troughs than when you've been on it for a while.
Yeah.
When your baseline state is optimal testosterone levels, those peaks and troughs don't impact you as much. But when you're starting out, like some guys do much better with three times a week than twice because they are quite sensitive to those peaks and valleys. But over time, I think for most people, in terms of the sake of compliance, and if you're busy and you've got stuff going on, I think twice a week is the sweet spot.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like the difference between like doing it once a week is like having like a massive cup of coffee first thing in the morning, and doing it twice a week is like having a cup of coffee in the morning and a cup of coffee again at like 11 or 12 in the afternoon.
Right.
Or late morning, whatever. Same amount of caffeine, same amount of coffee, but you're just splitting it up a bit more because you're understanding the half-life and the peaks and the troughs. You know, daily injections are probably the most mechanistically ideal because they would mimic natural production the most closely, but
sure,
it gets old. Subcutaneous injections sound good on paper, but for a lot of guys, it doesn't work for them. If you put it in MCT oil, like a thinner oil with less viscosity, more guys will get success with subcutaneous injections, but a lot of guys don't. And I'm not sure about putting oil into subcutaneous tissue, to be honest, because it has to drain via the lymphatic system. I don't think that that's a good idea. So I think that it should be put into the muscle. I prefer to put testosterone compounded in MCT oil because it's thinner, so it draws and injects faster. So you can generally use a smaller syringe, which over time, like people, like, you get sick of stabbing yourself. When the novelty wears off, you're like, fuck, man. Like, so, you know, I like to use a 29 gauge half inch insulin syringe into the delt. My personal TRT dose, I take 250 a week. That's what works well for me. And that's half a mil in each delt, you know, half a mil on Monday, half a mil on Thursday. Sometimes I'll do ventroglute if I can be bothered, but generally I just whack it into the delts. And that's what works for the majority of guys.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not a fan of the subcutaneous whatsoever. Never have been. I am interested because I've always just done intramuscular. Always. I do a 25 and I am not a fan of pinning, especially after this long. And so I'm going to have to talk to you later about maybe switching to the insulin syringe. We'll talk about it some other time so I don't do this on here for my own personal, but I'm interested in that. I want to talk to you about that. Little bit later. I'm going to throw this in at you just for your entertainment and for people out there about Sustanon. I mean, literally, I had to do videos on Sustanon. So here's a funny one. When I moved to Maui, this was in 2012, and that's kind of when I started doing videos, and you know, some people recognized right away. But I would overhear, and they would call it the Sust. Are you on the Sust? And they were acting like it was some spectacular form of testosterone that was somehow better or gave you bigger results than other forms of, it's like somebody taking Tren Hex and thinking it's going to give you a better result than Tren Ace. It's still Tren, just like this is still test. So Sustanon is not any more superior than any other form. It's just a fucking mix of ester chains where maybe you'll feel it a little bit quicker, but you're also more at risk of post-injection pain, having shorter esters in there mixed in. I'm not a fan of it at all. I don't fucking touch it. I don't find anything special about it. I don't find anything more beneficial about it than anything else. It's just like you said, it's like a, almost like a marketing trick, or it's just bullshit nonsense. And I know it was probably designed for TRT, or that was the thought or whatever behind it, but I don't also don't care for it for TRT either. Like you were talking about, I'm a boring ass, give me Cipionate and that's all I want, you know, and that's how I've always been. So, and do you ever find people using propionate for TRT? Because I do. I hate pinning so much that I can't do it. But do you run into that at all?
I think that propionate and sustenone by extension can often be more dopaminergic for guys because you get that peak of free testosterone. And I think that's why guys like it more. But when it comes to propionate, like I think that propionate really does require daily shots. I mean, yeah, you can get away with it every other day, but like, why not just do Cipionate every other day? If you're going to do it that way, but because propionate is generally like 100 milligrams per mil, I mean, you're pinning more than double the amount of oil and you're not getting the thing I like about Cipionate and Enanthate, and you'd be the same when you've been on it for a while, is that if you're doing twice a week shots and you're traveling, or, you know, you've got stuff going on, or like all that kind of stuff, like, it's nice to be able to just, like, you know, if you're doing Monday, Thursday and something comes up, you can do your shot on Friday, or you can do your shot early on Sunday. And it's, you're really just spacing out the peak over the course of the week. Whereas when you start using things like propionate, you become a lot more tethered to your protocol.
Yep.
And when, you know, if it's something like putting a bit of cream on every day, okay, well, that's a lot more chill. But if you're now becoming reliant on doing a jab every day, otherwise you're going to experience negative symptoms. I mean, I just don't think the juice is worth the squeeze.
I agree. 100%. Totally agree. All right, cool. I wanted your thoughts on that. So I want you, because I'm honestly not nearly as versed as you are on this either. And I learned quite a significant amount from you. And, you know, in my younger years, I would not want to admit that I don't know something very well or whatever that I learned from somebody. But as I've gotten older, I want to always give credit and realize that I can learn from everybody. And I'm talking about pregnenolone. I know a little bit about it. Obviously I need to for what I do, but you come across to me as somebody that has spent countless hours on this with the knowledge base that you have. And I know you don't have a ton of time left. Could you just maybe talk about the importance of pregnenolone, maybe quickly say what it is and why you've gotten such a deep, you know, knowledge base on it, or what made you focus on that so much? Cause it's not talked about nearly enough as it should. And I think you know that, and maybe that's why you focus on it, but could you just dig into that a little bit for everybody and for me?
Yeah, definitely. And for everyone watching, I've just put up I did a webinar for Merrick Health on pregnenolone, DHEA and thyroid, which is on YouTube now. So you can check that out for like a big fucking lecture on it, similar to the one that I did at the Olympia.
Yes.
But in a nutshell, and for people who want a bit more of I'll say some different stuff about it this time. I got into pregnenolone in terms of answering the why, because I had a traumatic brain injury. So I had very debilitating vestibular neuritis. So my vestibular nerve on the right side of my head, which is the gyroscope that, so if you move your head to the left, you've got this gyroscope that goes like, you moved, but the world is still here. But for me, that blew out. So basically, it was like I was spinning around in an office chair, you know, 24/7 for years straight. It was very debilitating. And during that time, I came across Dr. Mark Gordon on Joe Rogan with a guy called Andrew Marr talking about the endocrine effects of brain injuries.
Yeah.
And one thing that helped me recover from that brain injury and do my rehab was pregnenolone. So I had a very personal vested interest in it.
But
the thing that I became very surprised about was that there was no informational content on it at all. There was nothing that you could become educated about this, even though it had been around and practiced since the 20s. And, you know, I found a lot of like Ray Peet's work on it. Mark Gordon had some stuff. Neil Ruzier had some stuff. Keith Nichols had some stuff. Dr. John Crisler had some stuff on it, but not a lot. So I basically just made a lecture on it. I was like, okay, well, I'm going to find every study on this. I think there was 44 studies, read them all. And then I made a science-based, I was at university at the time. So I did a lecture on it and put it on YouTube. And that got a bunch of traction because like it was and I think it's still the most popular pregnenolone video on YouTube.
Has to.
And that gave me a lot of insight because everyone just started emailing me their labs and emailing me what's going on. So I just observed a whole bunch about it. And I got more into it because what I found with pregnenolone deficiencies is that if you have a pregnenolone deficiency and you need pregnenolone, it is absolutely fucking debilitating. And it's something that leads a lot of guys to suicide. And it makes life very much unlivable because your brain's chief regulator of oxidative stress and neurological function and your one of your brain's primary antioxidants is offline. So basically you experience inner hell in your brain because it's just you're completely out of whack. Your neurons are just firing all over the shop. Your quality of life goes to shit. Your sense of happiness and pleasure goes to shit. You can't focus, but you can't sleep. You're wired and tired. It's a horrible state to be in. And a lot of the time it's induced from drug abuse, whether it's particularly massive doses of Decca and Tren seem to do it. I don't know what it is about the 19 NOS and dysregulating it, but it does. As well as brain injuries and PTSD. So a lot of the time, military veterans, NFL players who've been heavily concussed, Muay Thai fighters, MMA fighters in general, just fighters in general, or people who've had, car accidents and things like that, when they're not quite the same after these incidences, the doctor will put them on an SSRI, put them on an
Right.
antipsychotic, refer them to a counselor, and it doesn't fix the problem. And it's because that they're missing this key endogenous hormone, which regulates a whole bunch of really important functions. So I became interested in pregnenolone because I just genuinely wanted to help people who were going through what I went through, which was brain injury hell. And I think it did a lot of good. And what I've found in the recent years, unfortunately, is that people have kind of worked out that pregnenolone is really helpful for people who need it. And they've extrapolated a lot of those benefits to think that it will apply to people who don't need it. And that's not true. So if you look at the benefits of pregnenolone and go, wow, this sounds like the best, anti-stress, nootropic, thing in the world, it's important to understand that more of something that's good does not mean better. So if we stay up all night and have this conversation, we're going to feel like shit. If we have a couple of cups of
Right.
coffee, we're going to feel better. If we have 20 cups of coffee, we're not going to keep feeling better. We're going to go past the sweet spot and we're going to start to feel worse. And this is
Right.
the reality of pregnenolone is that we can't cherry pick the benefits. So guys need to really understand that if you're not deficient, you leave it the fuck alone. Otherwise, it's going to jack progesterone up and it's going to be anti-androgenic and it's going to give you Decca dick and it's going to cause all the anti-androgenic effects that high doses of Decca does, because Decca is
Got it.
also a progestin. So that's the most important thing that guys can understand is that how it doesn't matter how good pregnenolone sounds, and you're like, yeah, that all sounds awesome. If you're someone who doesn't have low pregnenolone, but you have low pregnenolone symptoms, generally that's coming from chronic stress. And that can be psychological stress, biological stress, all these different factors. And treating that with getting to the root cause, working on managing your mental health, supplements like phosphatidylserine, CBD oil, magnesium, glycine, taurine, all of these theanine, all of these things can be really helpful. But taking pregnenolone when you don't need it will cause more harm than good. But if you do need pregnenolone and you don't take it, nothing else will make you feel better. So that's why I'm so passionate about guys checking their pregnenolone levels, especially guys who've abused anabolics before and like you're on TRT, but you don't quite feel right and you can't tolerate the optimal testosterone. One thing that you see all the time, and this might resonate for your clients or guys who are watching this, is that like you can't take the optimal amount of testosterone without getting side effects. So if you take your testosterone up to a good level, you can't tolerate it. And then if you drop it down, then you get low testosterone symptoms. And you're trying to find this fucking Goldilocks zone that you can never find. And what you actually need is the higher level, but you need the pregnenolone in there to balance it out.
Got it.
But the important thing is to get the testing done and make sure it's actually deficient. And in that YouTube lecture, I've got all the numbers in there that you need on the lab work. It's all in the Beyond TRT ebook if people want. Like it's all. I've given away all the IP. I hope that every clinic in the world steals all my protocols and uses them for their clients so that people stop getting fucked around by it. It's all there. It's all super easy to understand. And yeah, it's a big passion point for me because I've had so many guys reach out and it's, when I went through all my shit with my brain injury and I was like, if me doing a whole bunch of this, because at the start I was just doing it as a hobby. Like I was just making lectures because I was like, that's what I did for fun. Like,
right.
A weirdo. But I was like, if this saves one person's life, then I'm good. Like I'm happy. Like I'm that's sweet. And the amount of guys who reached out and being like, I got on Pregnant Alone and it saved my marriage. Like I was going to put a gun in my mouth and now I feel so much better. And like, you know, guys will be like, I took a walk across the beach and I cried because the ocean looked so beautiful and I hadn't felt anything in so long. Like shit like that. Like when you wake up to a message like that, you're like, oh, okay, I'm going to have a good day.
Yeah.
That stuff's really cool. So I became really passionate about it because I saw the impact that it made, but I've also seen the amount of misinformation out there about it that I just wanted to set the record straight, which is why I wrote the books and made the lectures and, you know, doing all this kind of stuff with people like yourself.
So with Pregnant Alone, for example, because obviously it's not an item you see on a generalized test that's tested for, is there something that would be indicative of you maybe having low Pregnant Alone or certain symptoms, or is it a test you should just request like once a year or something to check just in case? Or what's your feeling on that and the best way to go about that? Is like signs and symptoms, for example, or a test that might indicate, hey, you might have some other issues going on here?
I think if you've got issues with your hormones, you should get it checked once. And I think that anyone who's got mental health issues should get it checked. But the main hallmark symptoms that come from it are anxiety, forgetfulness, and insomnia and brain fog. But those things can be caused by so many other factors. But sure. If you've got those things going on and you've got a history of like concussion and, you know, or you've got a history of like anabolic steroid abuse and you didn't have that prior and now you're on TRT, but you don't feel quite right, that's when you get it tested. And my friends at Marik Health, they include it on their basic panel, which is great. Pregnant Alone is not the easiest test to find, but it's on their basic panel. And they've actually had me train their staff multiple times on Pregnant Alone to make sure that they're full bottle on it too. So they're really good for it. And it's easy. It's much easier to get done in the States than anywhere else. It's often a bit more expensive, but it's worth getting it checked once if you're not doing well. If everything's sweet and you're like, I'm doing super well, I don't have any problems, you don't have a Pregnant Alone deficiency. But if mentally, if you don't have a good relationship with the voice inside your head and you don't feel good when you lay down at the end of the day, it's not saying that you do have a Pregnant Alone deficiency, but it's absolutely something that you want to look into.
Cool. All right. Well, that was insightful. I'm curious to just check mine now just for the hell of it, just because, so I'm probably going to have to do that. I have a history of anxiety, not that it's debilitating or something that's not, you know, but still, just to know. And I would caution people to learn and pay attention more and listen to your body and learn more about hormones and changes, because there's multiple aspects clearly to look at aside from just don't feel like you're striking out if it's not low testosterone or it's not like the basic stuff here, I guess is my point. There's a lot of other health markers and aspects like, and that's why I wanted to talk to you about this so much. And I think next time I have you on, we'll dive deeper into Pregnant Alone, talk about DHEA, and maybe talk about Pregnant Alone with prolactin and progesterone and other things that kind of go along with it to just to get a deeper dive into it. I think that would be insightful and right up your alley. And I'd like to learn more about it selfishly myself. So I know that you have to go. I just want to really thank you for the time. And I expected to have a lot of insightful conversation with you, but even more than I expected. Would you, before we sign off, because I want people to find you, and I want people to read, because I read studies and concepts a lot throughout the week, but I've never sat down and just read something like a book like that and sat down and read 60 fucking pages right when you gave it to me and not moved off my couch reading it, you know. And if I'm doing that and finding it insightful, I'm sure that a million people will. So tell people where to find you, how to get your books, and maybe what exactly they could get from you in terms of coaching or guidance or what you do for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So yeah, I've spent the last few years just staying in the shadows because I've been, you know, pretty booked out ever since I started doing this. And I've only recently kind of begun like a foray into the mainstream with some, you know, some content that I think is really valuable for people. So people can reach me on Instagram. I have the world's ugliest Instagram account. I'm Dave Lee. I keep it that way for a reason. So if you search me on YouTube on the TRT and Hormone Optimization channel, you'll find a whole bunch of lectures I've done on a bunch of kind of niche topics. I've done lectures on modafinil. I've done lectures on meditation, vitamin D, all these kind of different topics around this. So you can jump on YouTube and find dozens of hours of me going through these topics. And otherwise, my website is advancedfundamentalhealth.com. And I've got two ebooks on there, TRT 101 and Beyond TRT. And they are $29 Australian, which is like fucking like $18 US or something. They're dirt cheap. And they're priced that way because I could have sold them for $1,000, but I want everyone to be able to access them. If you are not doing well financially and you can't afford it, you send me an email, I'll send it to you for free. I want everyone to have this content, and especially for your listeners as well. And that's how you can reach out to me. I do one-on-one coaching. I do have a bit of a waiting list, but you can book via my website to get in with me. And I do one-on-one consultations for an hour. We go through everything. We work out what's going on. And if you're in a situation where like no one's been able to work out what's going on, I'm a problem case, like let me have a swing at it, because that's what I do.
Awesome. Well, guys, I will put everything in the description so you can get to Dave and get with him. So once again, Dave, I cannot thank you enough for your time and the conversation, not only for everybody out there, but for me personally. So I really appreciate it. And I'm looking forward to getting, you back on here and talking with you further along as we go now. So really appreciate it, brother. And everybody, make sure that you check the description, get with Dave, check him out. And stay tuned for plenty more to come. Dylan Jamelli and Dave Lee signing off.
Thanks, guys. See you later.